Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program is brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit culinarycenter.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
There's a good food community that lives in my pocket. Find out more on this episode of Tech Bites. Hello, hello, Heritage Radio Network listeners. It is Monday afternoon at 1 p.m. I am in Bushwick, Brooklyn, in the backyard of Roberta's Pizza, which means it is time for Tech Bites, the Heritage Radio Network show that talks about the intersection of food and technology. And today, that technology is kind of like a two-for-one. We're here talking in studio with Rachna Govani, who is the CEO and co-founder of Foodstand, which is an app and a little bit of a startup entrepreneur community. Thank you for coming out today in the
thank
snow.
You. It is a beautiful snowy day in Brooklyn, and I'm happy to be here.
She's being very generous because our typically cozy shipping container studio has a broken heater. So we are huddled in our coats.
It's balmy. It's balmy compared to yesterday.
Looking longingly at the potbelly stove, flaming, burning wood on the other side of the glass window. For those of you listening in the future, today is February 15th. It is President's Day. It is a holiday, which means Roberta's Pizza is jam-packed with folks having a toasty late lunch. It's also starting to snow. I feel like every Monday in the winter, my show is at the beginning of some big storm that we're bracing for.
It's a great way to start the week.
Exactly.
Beautiful vistas of New York City.
Exactly. So joining us also today in studio, making sure that this scintillating conversation turns into broadcast podcast radio, is our engineer, the station's executive producer, party DJ of full service radio, as well as music producer of the lovely Odetta, who will be showing it South by Southwest.
Yeah, we're playing South by. Finally, we're also doing podcast panels at South by. That's another cool announcement. We're doing South Bites, so I will be there alongside.
Do I get some sort of copyright points
on the word bite? No, I don't
yes.
think so.
No,
no. Sorry,
you might have to buy that URL.
Yeah.
And also in the back, joining us for the first time is the new Liz.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Is today your first official day?
Day number one.
For those of you who haven't been following along the story, our most beloved and talented producer-engineer Liz Smith has gone to the big tower of Bloomberg in Manhattan to produce amazing podcasts over there. So we miss her, but we wish her very much luck and love.
Much luck.
And much luck. That brings a new person into our orbit, which we love new people.
Thank you.
So we'll be looking forward to hearing from you later on the show. At the very beginning of every show on Tech Bites, we start with an app, like a good meal, and we go around the room and we talk about apps that we love, new things, old things, things we can't live without. Everybody gets to mention one. An app that they don't work on is sort of the rule. And I'm going to actually start off by asking Jack how his 30 days workout app is going.
It's going.
Yeah?
6 consecutive days so far.
So this is like restart number 4.
Mm-hmm. Wow. No, come on. Restart number 3. Yeah, it's happening.
So you're on, what day are you on?
I'm on day 6.
That's awesome. What exercises are you doing?
I'm just doing mountain climbers. That's it.
That's good,
I'm
though.
I'm going to start somewhere.
Mountain climbers
are good. We got a membership to our local Y as well, Odetta and I. So, I'm going to kickstart some things into gear.
Excellent. Will there actually be kicking?
No.
No.
Come on. I can hardly run right now. I'll get there. But I do have another app to report on, which I've brought up in the past, and I think you brought up in my absence on a previous show, Tidal.
Yes, I brought that up last week for Tech Bytes episode 50.
Yep.
It was related to the weekend drop of Formation, mm-hmm. and thus the free download and the free 90-day listening.
Yes, so I started my free trial, all for Kanye.
Are you a fan of Yeezy fashion? Did you watch the live streaming
of
the fashion show?
I watched it after it aired. If I had a lot of money, I'd buy some Yeezys. Sure, they're nice.
But I don't know, Jack.
The shoes, not the full outfits.
I don't see you in like a frayed fluorescent orange pullover.
No. No. The shoes.
With man leggings.
The shoes are cool. The rest, not so sure. But I did download Tidal, and it's funny. You know, I was upstate in Narrowsburg, cool little town upstate by the Catskills. And I was like frantically waiting for this album to come out. I'm really into Kanye's music. And of course, the album comes out while I'm without cell phone service, right? So when we get coffee at the coffee shop, I connect to the Wi-Fi, and Tidal has this awesome feature, which you can download the album for offline streaming, I guess.
Yes, you can download any of your playlists for offline streaming.
So I downloaded it while I had coffee at the coffee shop. We went back to the house with no cell phone service, and I was able to listen to it in full. I was like, wow, look at that. Title's pretty good. But I will be canceling my free trial because that is a ridiculous amount of money to pay a month for me.
How much is it per month?
For lossless audio, I believe $25 a month. Yeah, it's a little bit, that's a little bit much. Which is crazy to say because, right, when I'm a kid, growing up buying CDs, I would buy at least two or three CDs a month, and those were $17.99 each. So it's just funny how, you know, the value of things has changed over time.
You know, I am too in my 90-day free trial, and, you know, it's kind of interesting. They have some nice curated lists and videos, and I do like the feature where you can download things because I do most of my listening when I'm walking and on the subway. And in my mind, it was $9.99 a month. And I don't know why, but I'm shocked and appalled that it's
$25. You know, maybe the basic plan is they have a few different plans, and one of them is for lossless, which just means like the quality of audio is higher. So instead of it being an MP3, it's a what they call a FLAC file. I think they call it their hi-fi subscription, and I'm trying to see what the price is on the basic one. But there is a chance that there's a $9.99 option.
I don't know if my ear can distinguish the difference.
Probably not. Not saying you, most people, even right. me, if I did a blind listening test, it's tough.
Okay, so Tidal. Interesting, yeah. Especially in the Fashion Week, you know, live broadcasting of the fashion shows and everything. There were, you know, to point on the Yeezy fashion show at Madison Square Garden last week, I thought it was interesting to note that a couple chefs, Andrew Carmelini, Dave Chang, mm-hmm. Both had that on their Instagram feed. That looked like they were there. Wow. And I wouldn't necessarily have pegged them for fashion guys, but I'm going to say that I think the connection was both of them have fast food outlets at the Garden. Carmelini has Sausage Boss and Chang has Fuku.
Is that new, the Chang Garden thing? Because I know I've seen the Carmelini thing, but mm-hmm. interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Tidal. Tidal and 30-day workout. Rachna, do you have an app that you like these days?
I have plenty, but I'll give you two that are sort of indispensable in my life.
We love indispensable.
the first one, it's an oldie but goodie. Johnson & Johnson a long time ago put out the 7-Minute Workout app. There's plenty of these, like, watch these figurines on your phone, do push-ups and mountain climbers and follow along, but I like the Johnson & Johnson one because it requires absolutely no equipment. I travel often, so I can now work out pretty much anywhere, including once I did do this in the meditation room at the airport, which is really, it's sort of a strange place, but I did do some mountain climbers in there with the Johnson & Johnson app. So that is one that I do not live without. And
is,
then...
Is that Johnson & Johnson, the like big soap
company? Like baby shampoo.
Johnson & Johnson family of products.
Yes.
That Johnson & Johnson.
That okay. Johnson & Johnson, exactly. And they have a nice British man who does all the voiceovers for your mountain climbers. And then the second app that I absolutely can't live without is AnyDo. It's one of the many task management kind of to-do list apps. I think I've tried pretty much every single one of them out there. And what I like about AnyDo is that it works across all platforms. So if I'm sitting at my computer, if I'm sitting on my phone, I can manage all of my tasks. And it also just gives you the very beautiful instant gratification of crossing something off your list, which it's silly, but it's an important positive feedback that you're used to in the paper world that now has been brought to the digital world. So I am nothing without my AnyDo list.
How do you spell AnyDo?
AnyDo.
Okay. Sometimes you get creative spelling
world. Totally phonetic, thankfully, which is how I found it.
And you prefer that to Trello or Evernote or some of those other newfangled productivity apps.
So I use Evernote for note taking. I think this is one of those classic examples of a tech company that has done a lot, but people continue to just focus on its core use, which is a digital notebook. So I use Evernote as a digital notebook, not for task management. I know that has those features. I've tried Trello. I've tried Basecamp and sort of the whole host of other apps that are out there. But AnyDo is the one that sticks. And I can't totally tell you why it's better than all the others, but my litmus test is really like, can I keep up with it? And this one has stuck around longer than others.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Two ringing endorsements.
Yes.
And our new Liz, do you have an app that you like?
I don't know. It's not new and it's not sexy, but lately Weekender has been really coming in handy. The Q train, my train, hasn't been running so well lately, so it's been helping me stay abreast of what's going on.
So Weekender, is that
it's an MTA
app?
Yeah, exactly.
Is it made by the MTA or by somebody else?
Yeah, I believe it's by the MTA. Yeah, it uses their logo at least. So
there has been so much work on the subways in New York City on the weekends that it's been a disaster.
Yeah, we were literally stranded in my neighborhood for the last several weekends because there were no trains. I mean, we could take cars or whatever, but
Okay, Weekender. That's good. That's actually very useful. The first app that I did on the very first app segment last year was, it's very beautiful, it's very simple, it's called Is the L Train Fucked? And it is a little L Train logo, and you tap it, and it either says yep or nope, and then that's how you know, because at that point in time, the L Train, I was just starting to take the train out here on a regular basis for the show, and I was petrified of getting slammed on the L train and then missing a live broadcast of Tech Bytes.
Yeah. Sounds like that app needs to make a comeback.
It's beautiful. Yeah. It was actually created by an art director who just pulls the MTA API and just made a beautifully, simply designed app. Is the L train fucked?
Yep. Simplicity is the key.
It's wonderful. So, Food Stand, the app.
Yes.
Is why Rachna is here today. And, you know, it's again, I think the duality of the Food Stand app, that you're creating a virtual digital community through the app that lives on people's phones. But then you also have the other side of the coin where you have this real life community of entrepreneurs and startups and advisors who come together once a month in the Food Stand spotlights. So,
yes.
I would love if you could talk a little bit about, you know, which came first, the chicken or the egg, because it's really, they're both so interesting, robust, timely, have great interest from the public, from the industry, that I can see you making a really great go of just one.
Yeah, you know, it's a great question, and I think to answer your first question about which came first, chicken or the egg, I'm assuming the chicken in this case. So the chicken being the digital community. And the reason we wanted to build a virtual community is because we saw so many incredible things happening across the quote unquote good food movement. They were not just the things you read in the newspaper, but they were grassroots. They were things in communities you don't always hear about. They were done by people you don't always hear about or know about, and people who don't look like the people who used to do it before. And so we really wanted to, at first, just connect the dots, because for us it was such a beautiful mess, so to speak, where there was so much going on that we couldn't even make sense of it. So we wanted to create the digital community to sort of scale every grassroots amazing effort that was happening so you could benefit from the collective knowledge that was being put out.
So how do you describe or define the good food movement?
So I just,
'cause that sounds pretty broad.
It is. And I think it's become more broad. And it's become more broad because it's involved a lot of new people and new ideas, but it's really thinking about the same goalpost, which is a food system that is more resilient, that's more just, that's more fulfilling and nurturing to the people that are involved, not just the eaters, but the people who work in the food system, the animals who are part of the food system. And I think the good food movement, what I mean by its definition has expanded is basically that there are players who are contributing to all components of getting us to that goalpost. And because there's such a diverse array of activity, it's important for us to connect the dots so everyone can kind of keep tabs on what's going on and figure out if they have an idea, they know who to contact. If they have a resource, they know who to give it to. So we really wanted to create a platform that connected it so that more people who were interested, who were kind of on the outskirts, people like my friends who, you know, they've gone vegetarian, they don't totally know why, but they don't do anything beyond that because it's too complicated. We wanted to create a way to help the mainstream interested eater get more involved. And so that's why we started with the digital community, to make it easy for everyone to coalesce and help each other. Out of that came this very clear realization that in order for all of these amazing eaters to really vote with their fork, so to speak, purchase better food when they're going out at a restaurant or when they're going to a supermarket, they needed better food options available. And when we looked at the landscape of amazing new producers out there, there were tons of them. There were all of these new products and services coming to market, but they had challenges. And that's really where the Spotlight event came from. It was looking at the market of all of these new kind of demanders of the good food system looking for new supply. Let's figure out a way to also help the suppliers out there. So we partnered with an organization called Slow Money NYC, which is a funding organization based in New York, and they're chapter based, to basically give these businesses a leg up, connect them with the eaters that were interested, get them the feedback, the advice, the resources that they need in a very tightly packed event. So it was, you know, it was still fun and exciting to attend. It wasn't something sort of nerdy and heady. But through the Spotlight event, we were able to not just bring the eaters into the conversation, but we were able to help these suppliers that were really kind of fighting the good fight and building a really incredible business, help them get to the next stage.
So in a practical sense, your app is food stand app. If you know, people have their phones or in front of their computers, you can certainly look for it. The website is thefoodstand.com, and the app is in iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
It's really beautiful, and on the surface,
it
looks, I don't want to say superficial in terms of the mm-hmm. content, but it definitely looks like a really lovely place to exchange recipes and look at beautiful pictures of food and follow people who are cooking good food and mm-hmm. making good recipes mm-hmm. and building a community around that. The piece that you talk about, though, that informative movement, grassroots piece, how does that manifest itself in the app? Because it seems on the surface, you know, and people gathering around great pictures of beautiful food and cooking meals and sharing and all those wonderful mm-hmm. things is fantastic. Where do we find that deeper, more message, goal-driven piece?
So it's a great question, and it's actually why we just launched the 2.0 version of Food Stand last Tuesday.
Last Tuesday,
yay!
6 days old.
Woo! So you guys hearing about it first. We are all a little bit sleep-deprived and very excited.
This is the second week in a row we've had a tech premiere launch of an app or service on our show.
Congratulations. You should be the debut for all good food things out there. So we heard from the community exactly what you said, that the digital community where people were sharing food ideas and inspiration was beautiful, but it didn't help somebody really kind of make the decision to purchase better or make the decision to take action. So we basically relaunched the product last Tuesday to allow people to share a lot more information. And just in the last few days, it's been incredible. I've learned something new in the last 2 hours just looking at it. And so what's changed about the app is that we've now allowed people to share all kinds of information, not just a recipe, not just a food idea, but if they see, for example, the dietary guidelines were put out last month, people can share those and talk about them and have a discussion and learn from the experts and learn from the people who are maybe not deemed experts, but are pretty well read on the issues. So the app is really focused on kind of helping the community crowdsource everything they would need to know to stay in the know about what's happening in the good food movement, but then also learn how to take action once they've learned that thing.
So how does that manifest itself in a practical sense in the app?
So it's a great example that just I saw this morning. Somebody shared the Food Policy Action zip code search to look at your senator. So Food Policy Action, if you're not familiar with the organization, is an incredible group. It's founded by Tom Colicchio and a bunch of other food activists to help the average civilian eater learn if their senators or congresspeople are in support of a better food system. It's a great way for you to just type in your zip code and see if your senators are 100% supportive, 30% supportive, 20% supportive. So somebody had posted that, and then a bunch of people within the community now had a very simple action to take, which was search your zip code and see if your senators are supportive or not. I did that for myself and for my home community and realized two people that were part of the senator house were very supportive and one was not. So I immediately had an action step to take directly from kind of browsing the beautiful stuff that's happening on Foodstand. So if I was motivated enough, I had the exact thing I needed to do. I mean, that's just one example. You know, we have people sharing all kinds of information like events and offers. So if there's an educational seminar about understanding the dietary guidelines, for example, you'd find that on Foodstand as well. And then you can have a very simple thing to go to on your Tuesday night.
I love the zip code search to see how your senator mm-hmm. is doing.
It's an incredible tool.
It's incredible, and it's also very timely, mm-hmm. given that we mm-hmm. are in a hot, hot election year
yep.
right now.
Yep, exactly.
Fascinating. Mm-hmm. Well, so my next question to you then is, so if you are coalescing and aggregating mm-hmm. points of information, points of action, stories, are you dependent entirely on your membership base to aggregate that information for you? Or do you have an editorial point of view where you're making sure things you feel are important come to light? Do you do that with your personal feed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a bit of both, right? So Foodstand is a very strong manifesto that we've written. It's on our website. You have to sort of accept it when you sign up. And that manifesto has 9 principles that are related to what we think of as a better food system. So we run all of our quote-unquote editorial recommendations through that manifesto. One of the biggest is, you know, we believe in progress over perfection. We think that pure thinking about things in a pure sense, like only eat local all the time. You know, it's New York City. It's hard. We believe in progress over just taking that pure sense. So we'll put in our editorial voice to make sure people support that component of our manifesto. And we do that through making sure that in our emails that we send out, where we bubble up the most interesting discussions, we send those things. We do that through our own commentary, through our own personal feeds. But for the most part, it's quite incredible. Our community, you know, there's thousands of people that are already involved in the community. They're mostly based in New York. They're doing most of the content contribution themselves because it's also helping them, right? They share one article, they get 10 really interesting ideas from the rest of the community in return.
Wow. That sounds, you know, like come for the beautiful photos and recipes, mm-hmm. stay for the conversation.
Exactly. Exactly.
Kind of.
I'm going to use that.
Oh, my pleasure.
Yes.
We are going to take a quick break cool. to hear from another community of people who are come together to make good food. Our sponsor, the International Culinary Center.
I was sitting out walking in the valley, the angels in the valley of angels.
This is the RecTech remix of Tap Tap by Odetta Hartman. We'll be right back on Tech Bites.
I'm walking in the
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Well, if you just tuned in and you're wondering what the hell you clicked on, this is Tech Bites, the weekly radio show on the Heritage Radio Network where we talk about the intersection of food and technology. Do you have a favorite piece of food tech that you like? App, website? If you do, and we haven't covered it on the show, give us a shout at techbiteshrn@gmail.com or get in touch with us on Twitter and Instagram, Facebook. We are all over the digital media, and we are very interactive. We would love to hear from you. And today, we are hearing from Rachna Govani, who is CEO and co-founder of Foodstand.
Hello!
Which is an app bringing a community of people together around food and recipes, but also around information sharing to help us all learn more and do more to move towards a better food world for everyone. So that's an app that's in the digital space that anybody anywhere can access. But one of the interesting things about Foodstand, I think, that sets it apart from other pieces of food tech is that it is also real life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit about the Foodstand spotlights. How did those start?
Yeah, so IRL, you know, we do get together in real life. So spotlights started because we found that there's an incredible community of entrepreneurs who are really doing their part to change the food system. Everything from the cookie company who's using interesting ingredients to the next box delivery service. You know, we've seen a ton of them. But bringing local produce to your door, to services that are making it easier for local food to really kind of prevail, even on the ag side. And what we realize is that these people are, you know, they're competing against the mainstream entrepreneurs out there who might just be working on getting you a dessert faster to your door, which is not necessarily solving a real social problem. So we wanted to give those businesses a leg up, because that meant more of our community members could spend more of their money on those products. So Spotlight is a collaboration with Foodstand and Slow Money NYC to basically create an event that was first and foremost entertaining for all of our members, right? It's like super fun. It's a bit like a Shark Tank for good food, which everyone loves. Who doesn't love Shark Tank? And it gave the businesses a platform to pitch themselves. So they had an audience of 100 people that they could say, hey, look at my product. It's so amazing. You should try it. Then they got expert advice. So we have a panel of experts, usually an investor, a marketer, and an operator, who are there to give that business advice. So within 10 minutes, they get a ton of kind of very valuable consultation. And then on top of that, we layer on a way for the audience to participate, giving the average eater a voice in what the new food system looks like. So we let the audience basically weigh in through live surveying, which shows up on a big screen behind the presenter, so they can get their opinions heard too. So, for example, if a business wants to figure out how much should I charge for this new drink or for this new food item or something like that, then they can ask the audience and they can say, you know, I'm willing to pay $3 or $4 or $20. Really valuable information that normally would cost a business thousands of dollars in consumer research, they now get in 10 minutes on stage at a really fun event on a Monday night in New York City, just for having the bravery and the confidence to get up there and share their story. So it's really a win-win for everyone. And for us as a community, it's great to get all these people together in one place, because the magic that happens from putting unlikely parties together in one room is, you know, it's sort of undefinable, right? Like we have buyers and entrepreneurs and eaters having a conversation together that could spur an idea for the next new product. We've had people go on from Spotlight to win really big pitch competitions, to raise money, to open up a restaurant because they found a backer to give them one chance. And so I think we think of Spotlight really as a catalyst for really amazing things to happen in the rest of the food system. And we're just there to put the right pieces together in one place and sort of watch the magic happen.
So I've been to a couple of the Spotlight events, mm-hmm. and they are really interesting and a lot of fun. They're a great networking opportunity if you're in the food tech space. if you don't know anything about the food tech space or even the startup space, the classic entrepreneur stand-up where they give their 5-minute PowerPoint presentation and try and, you know, entice people to want to give them money and advice. If you've never seen one of those in action, but you're also interested in just the entrepreneurial space, it's definitely worth checking out because it is something very specific unto itself. It's not like anything else out there. Although Shark Tank is very close. I would be really excited if you had Mark Cuban come on as one of the...
We're working on it.
Oh, that'd be so much fun. He's my favorite.
I did meet him once.
Yeah?
Yes. It was a rare occasion at a bar in Detroit, Michigan. So not the appropriate chance.
So not around entrepreneurship.
Unfortunately, no, but I'm determined to get him back.
What did you say to him?
I didn't quite know who he was. It's really a silly story. My husband realized who he was, and I was like, I don't know who this guy is. And he was like, it's Mark Cuban. I was like, oh, hey, Mark. And then, you know, in the grand scheme of a bar setting, you can't do too much small talk. So, you know, it ended there, but I'm pretty sure we're going to find him again.
He is everywhere.
He is.
So the spotlights, how long have you been hosting those?
We've been doing those for about a year, and we host them on Monday nights so people in the food industry can come because, generally speaking, most people are off on Mondays. We do them monthly, and we do them in New York City, and now we're starting to bring them to other parts of the city as well as other cities around the country because it's been a really powerful way to activate the community, give feedback to the businesses, and then also get more people involved and excited about what's happening in food.
What has been your biggest surprise about these events?
You know, I think just the sheer success of them. We started them because we wanted to do something good for the community, but the surprising thing is all the stuff that happens after somebody comes to Spotlight. So the fact we've won, I'm sure folks who are listening know Jimmy Carbone because he has a show on the station. So Jimmy was one of our panelists once.
Must have been amazing.
Yeah, if you haven't met Jimmy.
Do you record the spotlights or videotape them?
We now do, but unfortunately we didn't have the one that Jimmy was on, so we need to get him back. So Jimmy, if you're listening, you are welcome to come back on the panel.
His show is Beer Sessions Radio,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly.
Beer Sessions Radio on, what time is that, Jack?
Sorry, it's Tuesdays at 5 live, and then, of course, available archived anytime you'd like.
And he also, if you want to see Jimmy in real life, owns a very comfy, cozy beer spot in the East Village. Jimmy's number 43.
On 7th and 2nd.
Yep, it's fantastic.
Yeah. So the story, so I'll share one of the many success stories that came out of Spotlight that is what's been so surprising to us. So we had one person present, and he was a barista at the time. His name is Randy. He's a chef now. And he wanted to do a pupusa pop-up. If you're not familiar with pupusas, it's this beautiful stuffed, like, corn. If you're Indian and you're listening, it's like a burrata, which is basically a round, tortilla type of thing stuffed with a bunch of veggies. Or cheese or meat, and he wanted to do a pop-up because he wanted to open a restaurant. So he basically...
What ethnicity is that?
El Salvadorian.
Okay, thank you.
And so he got up on stage at Spotlight and said, hey, you know, I have this idea. If anybody wants to give me a chance to do a pop-up... Jimmy obviously raised his hand because Jimmy is the most giving person I think I've ever met. He did a pop-up at Jimmy's, and from that he was able to open up his first restaurant. And then now he's opening up his second restaurant in NoHo, which is like an incredible location. And it all started, I'm not saying I take any responsibility for this, but...
No, take responsibility. You created a platform. Take responsibility.
Yeah. So the surprising thing has been all of these amazing things, like Randy opening up two restaurants after being a barista presenting at Spotlight only a year ago. That can only happen if you put the right people together in the room together. You know, that happened. I have another friend who has a bean pie, which is a kind of an old world pie that was only popular in one community, and then he presented at Spotlight. And
a savory bean?
It is a sweet navy bean pie.
Sweet navy bean pie. What part of the world is that from?
It was very popular in the 60s in the U.S. in certain black and Muslim communities because it was part of their sort of diet at the time. But it has not been kind of rejuvenated in a contemporary way. So
like pie with a pie crust.
With a pie crust. It's a baby pie. It's sort of
it's like a hand pie.
It's like a hand pie. It's the equivalent of, in terms of its role in your daily diet, it's more of replacing a granola bar, but it has more nutrients, less sugar, sort of all the great things that you would want.
I always think of Asia when I think of sweet bean, specifically Japan, the sweet azuki bean, the sweet red bean, the sweet black bean.
It tastes a bit like that.
Okay.
But it looks like a sort of baby, like a baby pie, like what everybody would always want. And so my friend presented, and he did really well. He went on to get a bunch of contacts, and now everyone knows him as the bean pie guy because they saw him on Spotlight. So I think to answer your question more specifically, the thing that has been so surprising is everything that happens to these people after they present. Whether it's people meeting them at the event, it's buyers who then buy their product because they happen to see it and they're excited about it, or it's simply a person who knows another person who can help them with the thing that they're looking for. So for us, it's really about, as you said, creating a platform that enables the stuff to grow faster, because we really think of our role as an amplifier, as an accelerator, and not necessarily kind of one piece of the puzzle.
So do you have... you've already listed some really great success stories.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a lot of CEOs and founders on this show, and one of the things they talk about in terms of creating a successful company is you have to have the resiliency.
Oh, yeah.
For, you know, the grinding out, the hurdles, the no's, the keep going.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say is your biggest surprise for something that, like, didn't work, that you had to work through?
So, you know, I think you mentioned this in the beginning and about the Food Stand app really started off as this place to generate inspiration. Our idea was, you know, you're a better eater if you're around other people who are eating better. So let's create a home for people to connect and see what other people are doing. Model behavior, right? Because that's, if I just watch what you're eating and I'm like, I actually trust you, I'm going to make those decisions. And the thing that was hard for us is we realized that wasn't actually enough, right? That was we had to come to that realization when we talked to our members, and that is a bit of a no. That's a setback. That's an opportunity to realize that the assumption that you made, the hypothesis that you had, might not be totally correct. But as a CEO, as frankly as anybody building a thing, you don't have to sort of have that title. It's critical for us to be reflective and listen, right? And listen to our community and listen to our customers to make sure that we're constantly delivering value. So for us, you know, the goalpost or the North Star or whatever you want to call it is always what value are we delivering to our members? And if it's off, it's our duty to fix it, because what the heck are we without our members? We're a community, you know what I mean? So if we're not helping them, then what are we doing? So I think the thing that's been driving us most is the fact that the customer, or the quote-unquote customer, or our members, or the people that are on the app or coming to our events, they are our most important constituency, so we must continue to deliver value for them. I'll share one other story about resilience that I think is just, it's important to mention, because I feel like the no, getting a no is quite hard. And people have asked me before, you know, how can you handle that, right? Fundraising, for example.
It happens over and over and over again when you're starting a business.
Over and over and over again. And I would say if you're young, put yourself in a position
to... Define young.
If you feel like you're young.
Okay.
if you feel like you have it in you to pursue something that might be a bit difficult, put yourself in a position of no. So when two of my first jobs, this is sort of more information than you're asking me for, but it's important.
We love the big reveal, though. Keep going.
Yes. Yeah, so two of my first jobs when I was in high school, the first one I was a telemarketer. To sell newspapers over the phone, local newspapers, not even like the New York Times. Like,
basically
the worst.
Got paid to hear no all the time.
Like, I was told that I should get a real job, that I'm wasting my time. Like, everything you could possibly imagine.
Telemarketing is tough.
It's the worst job ever, right? And this is in the age where telemarketing was much more popular. So people were getting phone calls
before
all the time.
Before the do not call list.
Yes, this is pre-do not call. Now I'm aging myself. But what that taught me was that your job is to persevere. Like, you are only paid if you persevere. So I built up a thick skin through that. And then the second thing I did, which is also a bit embarrassing, I was one of the knife sellers in high school. I sold Cutco knives. I don't know if everybody's familiar with this, but there's basically this crazy program that they offer to high school students to sell like steak knives door to door, which sounds, again, absolutely insane. But imagine the number of no's you're going to get when you knock on somebody's door and say, hey, I have a bag full of knives. Do you want a demonstration? It's absolutely insane. But I got a lot of no's, but I was successful enough at that that it taught me that no number of no's will prevent me from continuing on. And I think it's critical as an entrepreneur, as somebody who's just building anything that you're passionate about, to just never give up. Because if you do, then what the heck's the point of it?
Never give up, never surrender.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So uniformly, all the entrepreneurs and the CEOs and the founders say exactly that, that you have to have that thick skin and
yep.
you have to be able to power through all the no's. But at the same time, and to your point earlier, feedback from your constituency and iterating mm-hmm. based on that feedback is also very important. It's
Absolutely.
Very important just in a relational sense between the business and the customers. It's also, I think, part and parcel of the design thinking and the creative thinking that tends to run adjacent to most of the tech startups,
mm-hmm.
just given the nature of the business environment that they come from. So iterating based on feedback is just part of the way people solve problems,
Absolutely.
I think.
Absolutely.
Where is the break point between staying the course and the belief in your idea and iterating based on customer feedback and also advisor/investor feedback? Because what I have observed is many times you have investor feedback, advisor feedback, and customer feedback that are so strong that it almost changes the face of the business or takes it down a different path. So how do you balance those two things? The resiliency of hearing no 100 times, but digging in and believing in what your product is, but then also exercising that creative thinking where you're iterating based on feedback.
Yeah, it's a great question. And I would say that is 100% an art and not a science. The thing that I continue to think about, and I said this at the beginning, is that you're not building a product for yourself. If you're building a product for yourself, it's a hobby project and you should go like finish it in the corner and not talk to anybody about it. But if you're building a product for a customer, you need to know exactly who that person is, what motivates that person, and why they like your thing or they don't like your thing. Now, you brought up several different types of constituents. You have investors, you have advisors, you have the people on your team who maybe do or don't fit the customer profile you have, and then you have your customers. And so our guiding light is always, what does the member want? What does the member want who we are catering to? And that's what we listen to. Now, there's a delicacy in there, right? Because a member will say, I want these 10 bells and whistles. That is not the answer, right? Like, I don't need to go build the 10 bells and whistles. I need to get underneath that and understand what's motivating that person to ask for those 10 bells and whistles. Now, let's really dig into that. It's sort of asking the five whys, which is probably my favorite exercise. You have to ask the five whys as to basically, why is that person?
What are the five whys?
So the five whys basically is an exercise to ask why five levels down. So if somebody tells me, so for example.
So it's like being a five-year-old.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'll give you a great example. People had asked us to add a save button, right? This is a sort of a very tactical thing. They wanted a save button. So we said, why? Right? It's because people like the content. They want to go back to it. Why do they like the content? And why do they want to go back to it? Because there's not enough time when they're browsing to look at the thing. Okay, why is there not enough time? Because it's a mobile app. And so we go down this path of asking several whys. So we don't just build the save button kind of willy-nilly. We build something that's really going to deal with the exact need. And as a process, I think that is, like, that's the only thing that is scientific about it. Everything else is an art, because it's really a balance between kind of understanding motivation of your core customer and knowing when to close your ears and bear through the nose. The other example I can give is, you know, investors and advisors are critical to your business, but they're not always your core customer base. If your advice, let's say your target market is female, like moms, age 35 to 45, and your advisor or your investor is a 60-year-old man, right? But that person is not the same profile. So what the 60-year-old man thinks about your product is not as relevant. Your job as an entrepreneur is to convince that person that this is how the target market is thinking. And this is why your opinion, though valid, is actually not going to influence our business because we're not catering to you. So I think that's definitely part of the dance that we do as entrepreneurs, is really kind of being always in sell mode, stepping back and saying, okay, let's take a moment to listen. Now let's figure out who we need to listen to, and then understand the motivations of that, and then make decisions. So it's definitely, it's not even like a weekly process. It's sort of perpetual and ongoing, and I think that's what makes it hard for people who come from a traditional corporate setting to transition to something like this, because in a corporate environment you have stages, you have gates, you have all these sort of very clear milestones, and it's not possible to be iterative in that setting. And then when you're starting a company, you're just sort of always moving and always improving. There's a thing called the Dunn Manifesto that I like sort of live and die by. The Dunn Manifesto basically is that there's no such thing as done, that you should always be constantly evolving. And I think that's probably the best way to capture what it's like to be running a company like this at this stage.
So many things involved. So many moving parts, yeah. All the time. I feel like we could do a whole show on being an entrepreneur, being a successful entrepreneur, all the bits and pieces of advice and wisdom that we've heard over the course of time. It's really fascinating. It's fascinating because ultimately the ones who are successful often resonate the same lessons. And I think that's probably proof in the pudding, as they would say.
Absolutely.
We are, unfortunately, out of time. Time has flown by. Another one down. So two things. One, if you're interested in Foodstand and carrying a good food community around in your pocket and learning about different things, go to the iTunes store and download it. If you want to follow them, they are The Foodstand on most social media platforms. You can go to the website at thefoodstand.com. If you are interested in experiencing what the food tech world is like, and if you are an entrepreneur with a business, or a successful business person with a critical eye and lots of opinions who's not shy to speak in public, you might be good on the judging panel. Or if you just want to sit back and meet some people and watch it unfold, it's a really interesting experience. If you are someone who's thinking about starting a business, if you have a business, if you're, you know, a journalist and a food person, I would encourage everyone to check it out. Rachna, the next one is coming up next week.
On Monday, February 22nd. And we're going to be at the former Pfizer building, bringing the spotlight to the new Brooklyn Food Works kitchen incubator space. So 630 Flushing Avenue. The event is Monday, February 22nd. And you can find out more at thefoodstand.com/spotlight.
And is it a ticketed event for the public?
It is a ticketed event. It is only $15, and it'll get you food and drinks and all kinds of amazing connections.
That's
so it's definitely well worth it.
And the former Pfizer building is one of the big hubs in New York City, Brooklyn, for a lot of small food businesses. There's a lot of interesting things happening in the building, and the new food incubator space is pretty amazing. They just built it out, and it's pretty spectacular. So good recommendation all around for next Monday night. I want to thank Rachna Govani, co-founder, CEO of Foodstand, the app, and the Spotlight, for coming out on the snowy President's Day.
Thank you.
Thank Jack and new Liz for making the magic happen. Welcome aboard.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.